This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
Decking Sideways is not brought to you by Crazy Johan's Bulletproof Lederhosen Emporium. Instead, it's brought to you by CrimeCon 2017, which, as it happens, is starting like right about now. It's not too late to get a ticket. You can get a day pass. They have them available. And if you don't feel like spending money to get into CrimeCon, you can always come and see us after hours. Watch our social media, the Twitter, where we are, Thinking Sideways, and maybe on Facebook too, but we'll be sending out information about where we're going to be hanging out. We'll definitely be having meetups. So if you want to come hang with us, that's great. Nancy Grace is going to be at CrimeCon. I'm sure she's going to want to come boozing with us. So if you want to see Nancy Grace drunk, then hey, come hang out with us. We'll see you there. Bye.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't get it.
I brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hey there, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am Steve, of course, joined by...
Devin.
And Joe.
And, again, this week, we come to you with another mystery.
Another one. What's this one about?
Well, this one's about the Texas killing fields.
Oh, that's some of my best work. Oh, did I say that?
You got to stop saying these things out loud.
Damn it.
This story, before we get into anything... This story is a listener suggestion. It was suggested by Greg quite a while ago. Just a quick word of warning, this story does deal with the murder of quite a few young women. So if you've got little ears around, or if that is something that makes you uncomfortable, I'd recommend turning this one off or skipping it for a later time till the little ones aren't around.
Yeah. Mm.
So let's get into things.
Okay.
First off, most of you are probably wondering, what are the killing fields? And it can get a bit confusing.
Yeah, these aren't the ones in Cambodia, by the way. This is the Texas killing fields.
And it can get a little confusing when you're on the internet. So officially, the Texas killing fields are a 25-acre piece of land that is on Calder Road, or just off of Calder Road, which is halfway between Houston and Galveston, Texas, on the I-45 corridor.
The I-45, for you people who don't know, is a freeway.
It's an interstate.
It's a highway.
Yeah. That runs north and south, essentially, between the coast where Galveston is to Houston, which is about 50, 60 miles away. But bodies are being found up and down that stretch of road and in that area, which is why I said it's a little confusing when you do the reading, because there's an official killing fields, and then there's a larger term that's applied to this area, which is why sometimes you'll see this called the Texas killing fields. Sometimes you'll see it called the I-45 killer. there was one other name that I saw it under that I can't suddenly think of.
So there's
a couple of different names, and really it all depends on who's making the list and the number of victims that they're going to include, because there's a whole lot of stuff going on in this area, and there has been since the early 70s.
Yeah, the killing fields, it's like this, that's just like this little part of an oil field that's next to the highway, and like abandoned oil field.
In marshes.
Whereas there's miles of highway that are not part of the killing fields where people can still toss a body out here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to go through quite a few people's stories, so we're just going to jump right into this, which is with the very first one, and we'll work our way forward from there. So the first victim. The story begins in June of 1971. On the 17th of June, Colette Wilson, who was 13 years old, was dropped off after band practice by her conductor at a bus stop near her home. She didn't come home. And her body wasn't found until 5 months later, at which point they found her. She was about 40 miles away, and she'd been shot in the head.
Mm.
And I believe that she was partially, if not completely, undressed. And this is going to be something that we're going to see in a lot of these cases.
Level of decomposition?
Pretty extensive, because it had been five months.
Been actually dumped 5 months ago. Not
yeah, she had been out stored. In the open. Okay. So let's, you know, and I was going to talk about this later on, but let's do this now. All of these cases that we're going to cover, there's a huge problem with the recovery of any kind of usable information. In other words, the bodies are so decomposed because we're talking about South Texas.
Yeah.
We're talking
it's
about
hot.
Humid,
yeah.
hot. It's marshland. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. conditions are not conducive to a body being preserved for any length of time.
Yeah.
Nature begins to work right away. So like things like DNA, we all just take this for granted that should be just all kinds of stuff, but that's not going to be the case. So knowing that as we go in here,
yeah,
her and body... that's also helpful to know, you know, when we talk about, sometimes we talk about stories where bodies were stored for 5 months and then dumped after the fact and they, you know, were pretty
this
well preserved.
Not a, yeah.
But these bodies were all dumped pretty,
this guy,
quick after.
This was not one of the guys that kept them around for an extended period of time.
That's worth mentioning.
No, these were not that kind of trophy situation, I believe, is what you're referring to a lot of times when they're stored like that. But.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of the scenario here.
All right, so first victim is
Colette Wilson.
13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So moving forward in time, 2 weeks later, and that's from the time that Colette disappeared.
Okay, not the discovery of her body.
Correct. Brenda Jones left her house. She was going to go visit a family member who was in the hospital. Her plan was to walk up I-45. This was the 1st of July. And she didn't come home. And her body was found the very next day. It was in Galveston Bay, and she had been shot once in the head. And her slip, it's always described as a slip. I don't know if it's hers or just a random slip.
You would think it'd be hers.
Had been stuffed in her mouth. We go forward in time another 2 weeks. So now we're in the middle of July, and the beginning of August.
This guy's not wasting any time.
Not at all. We go to August 4th. And 15-year-old Rhonda Johnson and 13-year-old Sharon Shaw disappeared.
At the same time?
At the same time. So these two girls, they'd gone to the beach in Galveston to celebrate, I believe Rhonda's birthday was like the next week. She was going to turn 14, and they were celebrating.
It's a big one.
The big one. But witnesses say that they saw them at the beach, and they saw them leaving the beach, but they never made it home. Part of Sharon's body was found on January 3rd, 1971, by two boys who were fishing in Clear Lake.
Which is where?
It's about 20 or 30 miles away at the most. It's hard for me to answer this because there's so many different victims.
Away from the Galveston Beach?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So it's not right next door to where they disappeared from.
Okay. And what part of her body is
her head?
Okay.
Her decomposed skull.
Okay.
It was floating in the water when they found it, or just under the surface.
It's just the kind of thing you want to reel in when you're after a day of fishing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The boys reported that, and then through searches, it took several weeks. The rest of both Sharon and Rhonda's bodies were recovered in the marsh next to the lake. And it was it was several months after the recovery of the bodies that the police got a tip to look into a sex offender who was in the area by the name of Michael Lloyd Self. And we're just going to talk about Self briefly because he's one of the few times that somebody gets charged with a case.
Okay.
And there's some serious issues in it.
Okay. I'm going to ask kind of a question. I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead here. Was Sharon decapitated or was it...
Decomposition.
And then like an animal carried her head
She was in a marsh,
something?
You know. I mean, there's stuff, there's critters and, and decomposition happens.
As far as
happens.
I could tell.
As far as I am aware, yes. I mean, if you think about it, the vertebrae, they're not exactly locked together very well, especially when the flesh and tendons are gone.
True. Mm-hmm.
So that's why it would have gone away.
Okay.
So Michael Lloyd Self was picked up and eventually he would be charged with the murders of these girls. There's a lot of questions about that particular conviction because he said he was held and beaten by the local police and then he was threatened at gunpoint by the chief to confess to it. And he eventually gave in and he confessed, but then he continued to tell his story, but the details morphed and they didn't line up right with the crime.
Well, the way the description I heard of the interrogation was they made him, they gave him some paper and pen and they told him, okay, you know, he confessed, and he writes it out, and then the police said, no, 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 you got that detail wrong. Change that. And they kept making him modify his confession.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's not surprising his details kept changing.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever did it.
No. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that he said that he was innocent his entire time in jail. This was 1971. He died in 2000 in jail, having fought this conviction the entire time. He died of cancer.
There was a... forensic files on this. Not this specific, but it was a very similar case where this guy got convicted because he had quote unquote confessed. And basically what they had found is the police had been sitting in the interrogation room and they'd said, you hit her over the head, didn't you? You hit her over the head. And he'd say, yeah, you know, after like 15 hours of interrogation, he said, yeah. And they say, what'd you hit her with? And he said, my fist. And they said, nope. And he said, a brick. And they said, nope. It had to have been something like a bat or something. He goes, oh, a bat? And they go, that'd work.
God.
And I was just like, oh my gosh.
And unfortunately, this is not to say that law enforcement intentionally does that today, but back in the day, there was a different rule book. And what really makes me question the conviction against Michael Lloyd Self is that... two of the cops who pushed him into his confession were arrested 3 years later for bank robberies that they had been committing over the years. So, like, these guys were crooked and dirty the whole way.
Yeah.
So I really feel like Self was probably never guilty of the crimes that he was...
Yeah, it is. Although, that's a great little sideline if you're a cop, robbing banks.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, what you do is, you know, you run around the corner and you rip off your mask and your coat and you come back around the corner wearing your uniform.
Just make sure not to be carrying the bag with the big dollar symbol on it.
You got to ditch the bag. But which way did they go? Yeah.
Yeah. That is a perfect cover.
It is.
But we should probably get back to the girls story.
Yeah. I kind of like the robbery better. It's not quite so disgusting.
I know. There's four more girls that would disappear that year. So they disappeared, and it was 19-year-old Gloria Gonzalez. She disappeared on the 28th of October. She ended up being found 35 yards from where Colette Wilson's body was found.
The very first girl.
Mm-hmm. 12-year-old Allison Craven disappeared on the 9th of November. She was found 4 months later. 15-year-old Debbie Ackerman and 15-year-old Maria Johnson went to the mall on the 11th of November, and then they disappeared, and their bodies were found in a body of water with their hands and their feet bound, and they had also both been shot in the head. I think one had been shot in the front, and one had been shot in the back of the head twice, and then shot in the thigh. I can't remember which of the two girls.
Mm.
So it's really strange that, you know, there's some of these bodies are shot, some are not. So it's a weird shifting pattern right at the very beginning.
I was just going to ask if Gloria Gonzalez looked younger.
I believe she did. That's a good question. And again, I was going to say this later, but let's do it now.
Sorry.
No. There's absolutely no reason that this bit of information needed to come up anywhere in particular.
Great.
We're talking so far about girls, ignoring Gloria for the moment. Mm-hmm. We've talked about girls who are 12 to 15 years of age. Mm-hmm. And most girls at that age are very short in stature. And they tend to be, because they're little girls, they're rather petite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just hitting puberty.
They're just hitting puberty, so those growth spurts haven't happened. Mm-hmm. I believe, if I remember correct, that Gloria was a smaller girl. There are several others, as we come to them later on, that I will point out who are older in terms mm-hmm. of, like, Gloria, you know, this 19, 20, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they were rather small. So there does seem to maybe be a pattern
There's a pattern there.
But
okay.
You know, again, there's so many random things. It's
yeah,
hard to find a pattern.
As far as like mode of death, it's not necessarily. Mm-mm.
And also, he probably couldn't afford to be ultra, ultra picky because when you think about it, he's got to find himself at least one or two girls and no witnesses or police anywhere around. Mm-hmm. Which, when you think about it, you know, finding that your ideal target plus nobody else around whatsoever
and, like,
to witness this.
Once or twice a month.
Yeah, that often. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. he must have been like full time out there looking yeah. for victims. I yeah. mean, because, yeah. And,
yeah, it is amazing how rapid this is happening mm-hmm. between girls.
Yeah.
And again, this is another thing that I was going to talk about later, but let's do it now. You would think in this day and age today, this would be all over the news, and this would be all over the internet.
And people
would
tell their daughters
know.
To stay home.
We yeah. all know, but yeah. this is 1971. The police departments don't talk to each other because it's all little towns with their own police departments. They don't talk to
you
one another.
You thought that would have been all over the place in the
yeah,
news and stuff.
But there was just this weird, complete and utter lack of communication between news and media outlets and people from community to community and the cops themselves. So, I mean, they're disappearing from rather close, but not towns, but they're not the same towns.
And
so,
but they're getting dumped kind of in the same area.
Some of them, they're getting dumped in that same corridor, yes. Okay. So you would think people would notice, but people didn't notice this for, sadly, many, many years. Mm. The links were not made between a lot of these cases.
That's intriguing that it could be an entirely random thing or somebody who's clever enough to know that, you know, I'll just hit a different municipality. And let, you know, bureaucratic, you know, falling through the cracks and all that stuff.
Nail yeah. on the head, my friend.
Yeah,
nail
somebody,
on the head.
Yeah, somebody. I wonder if it was somebody like a policeman or something.
Well, let's keep going. We'll get into that bit later.
All
okay.
Right.
So we're gonna keep moving on. So the last victims that we talked about were Debbie Ackerman and Maria Johnson. They mm-hmm. went to the mall, mm-hmm. didn't come home. Just over a year after that, 16-year-old Kimberly Pitchford left school on January 3rd, 1973, and she was never seen again. Her body was found 2 days later in a ditch, and her cause of death was strangulation, so there was no gunshot in this particular one. And then thankfully, after that, things cooled off for a couple of years, at least according to what we know or believe. Because, like I talked about, there's this lack of communication. And the other thing that was common practice at the time with the police department is if a young girl disappeared, the automatic conclusion by the police was that she ran away.
Yeah.
She's just a runaway. Sorry, Mom and Dad, your daughter ran away. So no investigation would take place. So there's possibly more. Actually, I know there's lots more than just the particular list that I'm using. I know, Joe, you had printed out one of the lists. It's like
yeah.
70 people long.
Yeah, there's a lot of people disappeared. Some of them turned up, but of course not necessarily the same killer.
Right, and yeah. some of them are on these lists, some of them aren't. So it's hard to say that, oh yeah, it cooled off for 3 years with any certainty.
Yeah.
It could have continued, and the links just weren't made. They yeah. may have been taken farther than the I-45 corridor.
Or they could just, their bodies could have just never been found.
Exactly
could have
right.
totally
Why 100% possible?
Decomposed, not decompositioned. Yeah. Ha.
Decomposted?
Yeah, yeah, decomposted in, you know, a bog or an oil field or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wasn't necessarily tossing everybody in the oil fields.
No,
yeah.
no. They're, okay, so here's, folks who have heard these kind of stories when I'm running the mic are probably used to the fact that I will say, and there's X number more, and then I would just leave it at that with maybe a couple of highlights. But to kind of drive home the enormity of this whole thing, I have a list, and I had to resort to a spreadsheet.
Yeah, you did.
I did. Well. And I'm going to grab the spreadsheet, and we're going to go through, because we have just talked about 11 girls that have disappeared.
Yeah, 11.
I think 11 is what it is. Mm-hmm. The list that I have here has another 18 on it. So my list is almost 30 girls long. And like I said, there's other lists that are bigger than that. But we're going to go through the spreadsheet, and I will keep this as brief as I can with just what are kind of the big highlights, where and when we need them. Suzanne Bowers disappeared on May 21st, 1977. And her body would be discovered in March of 1979 in Alta Loma, Texas. Brooke Bracewell, I don't know exactly when she disappeared, but her body would be found in April of 1981. She had been out with a friend that day, the day that she disappeared.
Georgia Greer?
Georgia Greer. So
Georgia Greer.
So Brooke was 12, Georgia was 14. Both these girls' bodies would be found in Alvin's swamp, and they had been beaten to death. Heidi Fay, she was 23 years old. She disappeared on the 10th of October, 1983. Her body would be found on the Calder Road property in April of 1984. And Calder, when I say the Calder Road property, that's the quote-unquote official 25-acre Texas killing field.
Yeah.
So that's the official sanctioned area. Sanctioned's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. If you can actually easily find it. It's right behind that church. I can't remember the name of the church now, but it's on the highway there.
Yeah, I mean, if you type in Calder Road and Interstate 45, you'll find it pretty quickly. Moving forward, there's Sandra Ramber. She was 14, disappeared on October 26th, 1983, and is still missing to this day. There's a Jane Doe that was found in this time in February 1986.
And they're sure it's not Sandra?
They are pretty sure it's not Sandra. We don't know who she is or where she came from. The term we used before was the missing. Nobody appears to even know she's missing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Laura Miller, she was 16, disappeared on September 10th, 1984, and was found...
On the same day as Jane Doe.
On the same... Yeah, I was just... Suddenly that caught me off guard. It's on the same day. So Laura Miller, we'll talk about her briefly because she was last seen at a convenience store.
A lot of them seem to have been last seen at a convenience
store.
There's two
or three that were seen at a convenience store.
I've gotten four so far.
But what I want to talk about is Laura Miller is... So she disappeared and her body was eventually found. And it was found on the Calder, on the actual killing field.
Yeah.
But her dad, Tim, is an interesting figure in this entire case.
Oh, yeah. He got into it in a big way.
Yeah, because Tim Miller, the man lost his daughter, and I get that, but he it's almost like he went on a crusade. He found a calling. He had to find the man who was responsible, and I'm not going to say anything against him having done that. He's done some great things. He started a company called EquiSearch. They've gone all over the country, actually all over the world, using horses and boats to look for lost girls. Like, they do good work.
Mm-hmm.
But Tim has also done some very not good things in the search for his daughter's killer. And he has pointed the finger at some people and made some very, I would say, some very bad moves. And we're going to talk about those our theories when we talk about our suspects.
He has expressed some regret for that, too.
He has. It's not like the man just believes he's never done anything wrong. He's a human being and he gets it.
Yeah.
But it's concerning to me, some of his level of involvement at times.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the list, we have Shelley Sykes. She was 19. She disappeared on May 24th, 1986, and she's still missing. Her car was found abandoned on I-45, and she's one of the ones I'll point out because she was 4'11" and 90 pounds. So it would kind of look like the profile of a preteen or early teenage girl.
That's she was very 19. Small. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suzanne Renee Richardson disappeared on October 7th of 1988, and she was 22 years old. She's also still missing. She was 5'8" and 140 pounds.
So she's an outlier.
She's kind of an outlier here.
Because I mean,
She's tall.
Yeah, I can't think of any like 12-year-old girl that I've ever met that's also 5'8".
You know, I have a family member who at 15 was about 5'8 or 5'9.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's
So it just depends on the person. But yeah, she is a bit of an outlier in our general profile we're building here. We go to Lynette Bibbs. She was 14, disappeared on February 1st of 1996. She was found 2 days later. She was out with her friend Tamara Fisher, and Tamara, both of the girls disappeared at the same time, and both of their bodies were found on the same day, which is 2 days later. They were found on the side of the road in Cleveland, Texas. I had got this wrong. Well, this is the one that I got mixed up with the girls in the beginning, because it was Tamara who was shot in the head and Lynette who was shot twice in the head and once in the leg. So I incorrectly said that earlier. Yeah,
it's hard to keep them straight. There's a lot of killings here.
There's another Jane Doe, and she was found in September of 91. Crystal Baker, she was 13. She disappeared on March 4th, 1996. From a convenience store, and would be found the very next day. So the convenience store is just like Laura Miller and Heidi Fay. Crystal
Brooks,
was beaten,
Georgia.
Strangled. What's that?
And also Brooks in Georgia. Brooks Bracewell, Georgia Gear, also disappeared at
the convenience
store.
Oh, you're right. Crystal was found, like I said, she's found the very next day. She was underneath an highway overpass, and she had been beaten and strangled and sexually assaulted. So this is a case where it's obvious sexual assault, because the body was found so fast. Mm-hmm. We move forward another year, and there's Laura Smither. She was 12. She was found, or went missing on April 3rd of 1997, and would be found 17 days later. She left her house to go jogging and just disappeared.
I'm sorry, I'm just shaking my head, because, like, what 12-year-old girl are we saying, like, yes, let's go out jogging by yourself?
That does seem, kind of odd.
She was a ballerina. She wanted to be a ballerina, like, for real life. And somebody said, you need to train, and one of the things you need to do to make your body stronger is to start running.
All right. Yeah.
That's why she started running.
Okay.
And this unfortunately led to her demise. She was found in a retention pond in Pasadena. And go ahead.
Is that in that area? Sorry. I just think of Pasadena, California.
No, Pasadena, Texas. Again, it's within like a 20-mile radius.
Okay.
Yeah. So Laura Smither is one of the first cases where there was enough media attention to the whole thing that the cops actually started talking to each other in all of those areas. And that's when they started putting this larger picture together and realizing there's a bigger problem than any one of us realized.
Mm-hmm.
There's three more that I have here. One of them I was actually really hesitant to put on the list, and that is the next one, which is Tot Harriman.
She's an outlier.
She's completely an outlier, because though she disappeared on I-45 because she was last seen driving on it, and it was the 12th of July of 2001, but she's 57, so she does not seem to match what we've been talking about so far in the demographic of these girls. Mm. But I don't know.
I mean, she could have been small.
There is Sarah Trusty. She was 23, disappeared on July 12th of 2002, and would be found just 14 days later. She'd been last seen riding her bike. She's another one, 5'5", 130 pounds. Again, kind of within the range, more so than I would say with Tot.
Yeah, more than Tot, but still kind of an outlier.
She's still on the outlier. And then the last one is going to be Teresa Venegas. She was 16, disappeared on October 31st of 2006.
So we've got, 30
almost
years?
Almost 30.
Almost 30 years of
marriage. Almost four. That's 35 years. Is if it goes from 71 to 2006, that's 35 years.
35, yeah.
Gosh.
Although it could have been more than one. It's possible that somebody like took over the reins. And there were some gaps in there, too.
Yeah. There's totally gaps in there. And I think we're going to have to talk about some of this stuff in terms of single versus multiple killers or rapists or abductors in the theory section. As I said, there's so little pattern between when they disappear. Like, it seems like the geography is one of the main things. Some are shot, some are not. Some have their hands bound and their feet bound, some do not. Some are found fully clothed, some are found fully naked, some are completely decomposed, some are just dumped so that they're able to be found the very next day. I mean, even the ones who disappeared from their cars, there's really no crime scene, because though their car is there, there was no sign of real struggle. So it's extremely hard to figure out what in the hell is going on in this area.
Well, you know,
something bad.
And that's the interesting thing is that, well, you know, how do you get somebody 12 or to 57, whatever, to trust you and get in your car? How do you do that?
You don't always.
When you're a total stranger.
And,
well, I mean, I bet there's you know, a couple of types of people who could get who could actually do that, like policemen. You know, there is that. Not that I want to anger any of our police listeners.
I think what you're getting at, Joe, is a figure of authority is a better way to say that. Could be a policeman, could be a fireman, could be a paramedic, could be any a road service worker. I mean, there's anybody who looks like they should be able to. They're responsible to help you.
Well, or you know, a cop. Has an interesting position in a, sorry, we're like talking a little bit about theories right now, but you know, in the instances where cars were found abandoned, you say, you know, a cop could have pulled them over and said, you're under arrest, and put them in the back of their car. And, you know, most people aren't going to resist too terribly much. There's not going to be much of a crime scene. It's just going to look like there's a left behind car. And then whoops. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different stories you can tell as a cop. You can say, you know, I'm here. Your parents sent me to take you home. You know, if she's 12 or if she's, you know.
And in the 70s, that was not something that most kids knew was a bogus story. You know, there was a huge campaign in the 70s and 80s to not take candy from strangers and not let people tell you that your parents sent them
except
to pick you up.
Cops.
Yes.
I mean... Right, there are certain figures that have always been quote unquote trustworthy, and that generally the population will do what they say.
Usually. So, okay, now that we've angered all our law enforcement listeners.
I mean, it's again, it's a figure of authority or protection or help.
Yeah,
that's really what that boils down to.
Yeah, that would account for a lot.
It would.
But it still doesn't prove damn thing, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't prove anything.
No.
So what we have here is we have a theory section. Well, normally we would call this the theory section, but really today it's more of the suspect section.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about our suspects. And we have a huge laundry list of scumbags that we're going to talk about here.
Basically, we had a long list of bodies, and now we have a long list of scumbags.
Yes.
Although not every single one of them is necessarily a scumbag.
Okay.
There's at least one guy on here that was not guilty.
Okay. The very first guy is not a scumbag.
Yeah,
the rest of them
so.
I consider scumbags. Thank you, Joe. That's good clarification.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the very first guy. That is Robert Abel. And he was brought to the attention of authorities. He lived in Texas. He lived in the area actually adjacent to the Calder Road killing fields.
Yeah.
And he was brought to...
Unfortunately for him.
Yeah. Brought to authorities' attention, 1989, maybe 1990. And that he was brought to them by his soon-to-be third ex-wife. He owned a 11-acre property adjacent to the killing fields, and that's where Laura Miller and three other bodies were found. He initially participated in the searches, at least one search for bodies, and he had a horse stable, and he loaned horses to the police to use to search for bodies. So from the outside, it looks like this guy is trying to do good. By the way, the stable he ran was called Stardust Trails.
Aww.
So he seems like a good guy. Abel was a smart guy. I mean, he had worked for NASA for quite a few years, and he was part of the team that figured out how to get the Saturn rockets into space.
Yeah, they put rocket motors on them. That's what made the difference.
Well, he was a literal rocket scientist.
He was. Yeah, so that means he was actually very smart.
Yeah.
I underlined the word very when I said it there.
Yeah, I saw it.
So, but, you know, I mean, people are people, and he was fallible, and he was married several times, and each of his wives said that he had anger problems, so he wasn't a perfect human. So he did this thing, which is very bad, is he threatened to beat each of his wives. He did the good thing of actually not...
He didn't have to do it.
Yes, he never actually struck them. Instead, he would always storm off. And sometimes he was gone for hours. I believe there's at least one instance where he was gone for a day. So he just left. He got away. But he never actually hit them. But he did hit his horses. He apparently would use poles and chains on horses when they made him angry.
What a jerk.
Yeah, that's not standard operating procedure.
Not standard operating procedure with horses. It actually does not work. But
generally, standard operating procedure never includes hitting things with chains.
Or poles.
Yeah, I would think not.
Like, I can't think of a thing.
Well, I know a motor or two that I've had, like an actual combustion engine that I whacked it with a pole and it worked better, but that's the rare exception.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll take
Generally
it.
Speaking, I would not whack a horse with anything because they're bigger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot bigger.
Yes, they are. They really are. Okay, so he lives next to the property. He's a very, very smart guy. He's known to have this anger problem, and he's known to strike animals.
And he disappears when he's angry.
And he can disappear when he's angry. Made him perfectly fit an FBI profile of the person who they believed was probably killing these young girls.
I don't know, man. That would fit a lot of people.
It really would. Yeah. And this is where Tim Miller, Laura's dad, comes in because, unfortunately, Tim found out about this semi-match of Abel to the profile, and he latched on, and he totally went off the rails, and he accused him to... He made such a stink with the police. The police looked into Abel. He made such a stink in the community that Abel was ostracized. He went so far as to mount these illegal searches and digs of the property around and then Abel's property, and then actually went on to Abel's property and had people digging, looking for bodies. Like, he did this.
And police actually searched his house at least one time, and they really turned it upside down.
Yeah,
his property, and found nothing.
For their part, the police did their job. They went, they investigated, and what did they find?
Nothing.
Squat.
Yeah.
So they stopped looking at him, because there was nothing to support it. Tim Miller, on the other end, he didn't. I mean, this... Again, Tim Miller has apologized. He said he apologized to Robert Abel for this behavior, but unfortunately what it resulted in was Abel being isolated from the entire community. The man would walk down the street and people would yell killer and get their daughters out of his way. That is how bad it was and how afraid people were of him because of everything that had been said.
And all that happened, really, that he just happened to live next to where some bozo dumped some bodies, you know?
And he happened to be good enough to try to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, he beat his horses.
And
He did
bad things, but he didn't do them to these girls.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Like I said, Tim Miller, he says that he eventually apologized and that they talked and Abel understood, but the damage had been done. In 2005, Robert Abel died. He was driving a golf cart, and he drove his golf cart into the path of an oncoming train. That death was ruled an accident, though to me that smells quite a lot like suicide.
I agree.
But I don't know. But that's where everything about Abel ends, and he's one of the big ones that you'll hear about.
Yeah. We're officially saying stop it.
Yes, Abel was an innocent man in everything that I can tell.
But if you do a search on this particular topic, his name will come up in headlines.
Oh yeah, there's a huge article. One of the first articles I read about him, I was like, oh my God, why haven't they arrested this man? It was from like 96. It was a giant Texas Monthly article. I can't remember the author's name. And it was called, Is Robert Abel Getting Away with Murder?
It's one of the
first ones you find. And I was like, oh my gosh, why aren't they... And then I started reading everything after that and realized, you know, it was not what it appeared to be based on the information or the accusations that were made.
Yeah.
So let's move away from Robert Abel.
Yeah.
We're going to move
on. He might have done it, but
very, very, very doubtful to me.
Yeah.
We're going to say like 1 on a scale of 1 to 100.
Correct.
Okay.
Next up, we have Kevin Edison Smith.
He's got a middle name. He gets my vote.
So everybody in this story after Robert Abel, I use their middle name.
Oh, they're all serial killers. Okay.
Yes. Well, they actually all might be. You remember Crystal Baker?
Yes. Yeah.
She was the girl who disappeared in March of 96 and then was found in under the overpass,
mm-hmm.
40 miles away. She got into a argument with grandma and then ran away. She's one of your ones, Joe, that was seen at the convenience store.
Yeah.
She was using the payphone to call her mom is what she was doing. Well, because of what a screw up everything was between all of the local police departments, she was listed as missing for 2 weeks. Her family didn't know where she was for 2 weeks, even though they had found her body the very next day. There was nothing that the police could find at the crime scene to indicate who had killed her, and they had no leads. And so her case was cold for 14 years. Then, 14 years later, so that would be about 2010, there was an investigator, somebody in the forensics office, and I cannot remember who this lady's, what this lady's name was, but for some reason she was looking at this case and she decided to send off the one, I think it was a dress that they had of Crystal's, and send it to the lab to just screen it for DNA. And lo and behold, they found actual usable DNA on it.
Cool.
And even better, at the same time, Kevin Addison Smith in Louisiana had been booked on charges, and Louisiana law said, if you get booked and you get thrown into jail, we're going to take your DNA and drop your DNA into the system. And he was a match.
Wow.
To this case 14 years later, which is amazing.
That's fortuitous. It's good he didn't get arrested like a month later.
In a different state. If he'd been arrested in a different state that didn't have this law, we may never know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Texas Police Department, they get involved and they interrogate him about the case. And at first he says that he doesn't have any knowledge of it. He doesn't know what they're talking about. But slowly but surely, and then eventually he admits to it. And he says he never sexually assaulted her, which we know is a lie because she was sexually assaulted.
Well, I mean, technically.
Technically, I guess she could have had sex prior to him killing her. Is that what you're getting at?
She could have been sexually assaulted either he could have not killed her, I guess, technically, or some really horrible human could have come along and been like, oh, a dead body.
And done necrophilia.
Or, you know, she could have been assaulted before. It could have been.
Yeah, you're right.
That would be rather opportunistic.
I'm going to put my money on the fact that he's a liar.
Okay, that's fair.
So let's just keep running with that with that.
Totally fair.
Okay.
He probably is.
Okay, so.
Although I guess if you admit to murdering them, I don't know why you wouldn't also admit to sexually assaulting, but whatever.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is why I'm putting my money on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he said that, like I said, he says he never assaulted her, but he said he did give her a ride. And he admits that in that day, in that, not necessarily that day, but that time frame of his life, he was drinking a lot and he was doing a lot of drugs. And so he doesn't remember exactly what was going on. But he remembers that, quote unquote, she started freaking out and hitting and punching him.
Maybe that's because he was trying to rape her.
That's kind of what I would think was going on. He probably wasn't driving when this was happening. And he said that his response was to strangle her.
And then
she was dead. And then he decided, I don't know what to do. So he dumped her body. And he drove her body many, many miles away. So it almost makes you wonder, like, he had seen this spot before. It's a good place to dump a body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little funny that he took that corpse so far.
Again, that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't necessarily know why you would say, yeah, I strangled her and then dumped her body, but I didn't rape her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Why?
I mean, the thing to do is there's DNA. You just say, yeah, I mean, she was willing. We had sex, you know.
And then I dropped her off.
And then, now we had sex.
On the corner.
Now we had sex, and then she freaked out, and I had to strangle her to death, and then I had to get rid of the body. You know?
No, Devin's right. The smart money would be to be like, well, yeah, you found DNA. I was with her, and then I dropped her off. And
she said that was her stop, so I let her out, and I drove on my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be another way.
Yeah. Now, this guy, how he managed to avoid the death penalty, I will not know, but he did manage to do so. So he is currently serving 40 years in prison.
40?
Yeah.
Not even life. Okay.
No, it's a 40-year sentence. Yeah, that's how long he's in there. But The thing that Joe has pointed out and we're going to talk about now is the convenience store angle, because if you remember, Laura Miller back in 1984 also disappeared from the front of a convenience store. And there's a couple other girls. Laura Miller actually disappeared from the front of the same convenience store as Crystal. But there's a couple others who disappeared from the fronts of convenience stores. And this guy, you know, he was strangling women, and he strangled this girl at least. And we know that he was in the area. We also know that he was living, I think it was over the course of 20 years. He lived in 17 cities in four different states. So he was a rambling man is what I was going to say, but he was roaming around doing work. So it's entirely possible that there are girls in this age bracket who were strangled in these cities where he lived, and he could be responsible.
Sure.
Unfortunately, to play the other side of the coin, there's girls in other cities where he did not live who were in this age bracket who died by strangulation. So just because that happens, we can't say it's him.
A lot of that going on, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they did run his DNA, and that's the hard part. Like we talked about, so many of these bodies, they're in a marsh or they're in a ditch for months.
There's no good evidence.
There's no good DNA left.
No.
It's hard as hell to get anything that's usable.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going. We've talked about Kevin Edison Smith enough, so let's talk about Henry Lee Lucas.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, so Henry Lee Lucas, he's a self-confessed serial killer.
Yeah, he's thought to have exaggerated some of his the number of his kills just a little bit.
I would agree with that. I believe we'll get through it, and we'll talk about here the number that he claims, but he was arrested in Texas in June of 1983. That's when he really kind of came onto the radar in Texas for this kind of stuff. When he was 15, he ran away from home. I mean, don't get me wrong. His home life was horrible. His family was terrible. I mean, his mother was a prostitute, and she made him watch her with clients. Like, this is not the good upbringing that a boy should have.
Yeah.
So that any child should have.
Yeah, any child should have. So, I mean, I you can understand why the kid left. But he says that he killed for the first time in 1951 when a girl refused his sexual advances. He then would go on in 1960 to kill his own mother with a knife. He said he didn't realize he had stabbed her
He said, I know, I heard the story. It's like he was like, you know, I just hit her, you know, and then I looked down and I saw the knife in my hand and I was like, oopsie. And that's essentially, that really was his story. He didn't say oopsie exactly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He did end up going to jail for that, or prison. Yeah. He served 10 years for that crime. Technically, he was supposed to serve 20 to 40, but unfortunately, there was this push to early release because there's prison overcrowding, so he got out early.
And the man who stabs
his mother
to death is really the best candidate
for
an early release program.
Although they probably looked at it as an abusive situation where he's not likely to go out randomly killing people left and right.
Oh, no, but the problem was his story didn't match up because he said, you know, like you said, he realized the knife was in his hand and he said, oh, look, she's dead, and he ran away. Except
and
his sister,
she wasn't actually dead.
His sister came and found their mother still alive, but she didn't live long enough to get to the hospital. Like the guy,
so really nice guy.
So he gets out. This would be 1960. In 1971,
no, it'd be 1970.
Excuse me, 1970. He went around 1960. He got out around 1970, and then in 1971, he was convicted of attempting to kidnap three girls.
And then after they let him out for a second time, this guy is gonna just be rehabilitated, no problem.
Yeah. And after he got out from the conviction of trying to kidnap those three girls, he continued to beat and kill.
Yeah.
He was arrested
Surprise.
In 19... Yeah, not really. He was arrested in 1983 on charges of unlawful possession of a firearm, and that actually quickly grew into a larger charge for the murders of both Frida Powell, and Frida was a girl that he had met. I believe he met her in Florida. She's described as having quote-unquote intellectual impairments, so I don't know where she is on the range of impairments, what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But he had convinced this girl to travel with him, and he treated her like a girlfriend until he grew tired of her.
How old was he at this point?
Oh, he is... So he...
He was born in 39, I think, or 36.
Yeah, he's in his early... he's in his 40s at this point,
dating
I believe.
Dating a 15-year-old?
Hey.
Healthy?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So he's charged with killing Frida Powell. He's also charged at the same time with killing a pastor who had given him work and allowed him to stay in a building that his religious movement owned. So, like, he's all around just not a nice guy.
Just murdering people.
And this is where what Joe was talking about when we first talked about Henry Lee Lucas comes in, is that once he got arrested, he confessed to the first ones, he started confessing to everything.
Yeah.
His confessions, initially at least, seemed to have related to the crimes that he committed, but then he started admitting involvement and guilt in crimes that were unsolved. And he seemed to be really good at filling in some details, so people kind of thought that it was him.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it seems like he's probably been discredited almost everything that he's admitted to, because he claimed credit for like 300 murders.
That's crazy.
Somebody did the math on a lot of these murders, and it would have required him to like drive for like a year, drive 370 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
To get around to all these places to commit these murders. And so
Obviously,
I'm sure he killed lots of people.
But not as many as he confessed to. I hate to admit, you're right. He probably did kill a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And he would have been traveling through the area between Houston and Galveston. So it's possible that he could be involved in one or two of the deaths.
Yeah.
But it's really tough to say. And in a way, he's done a really great job of clouding himself in just disbelief. You know, nobody believes him. So when somebody suggests, oh, I wonder if he did it, everybody's like, no, that guy admits he did everything. There's no way we can trust him to be usable.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a little game theory in that. If you start claiming responsibility for everything, eventually people will not believe you. And the time that you are actually responsible, nobody will believe it.
Yeah.
So
what's he got to lose or gain? I don't know. But these guys like this are so weird, because they start admitting this stuff just so they can get the body count, the number, to go down in history.
Well, one thing I will just say is this is 83, right? That he got arrested, that he starts admitting to a bunch of murders.
Yeah.
83. So, like, most of these women didn't really disappear. I mean,
there's a slew of them in the 70s.
But remember, he's
in jail.
Yeah,
he's in jail for a lot of that. Yeah.
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 So that's why I say he might be maybe culpable for one or two, but that's kind of stretching.
Well, no, he was out. Oh, I don't know how long he was in jail for the kidnap of the three girls, I guess.
Yeah, I don't have that here, and
I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't think he did it, but, you know.
It's hard to say.
Hard to say.
Well, let's kick him to the curb.
Okay.
No,
Henry. Let's kick him all to the curb. Very hard. Let's move on. We're going to move on to the one here that is titled Unnamed Man in 1980.
Where you got this one.
Yeah. So, this is one of those I really hesitated to include, but dagnabbit, we include them all, so okay. Rhonda Johnson and Sharon Shaw. If you remember, those were the two girls who went to the beach in Galveston in 1971 and then never came home.
Yeah.
and Michael Self was the guy who was convicted of murdering these two girls.
Yeah.
Well, according to Unsolved Mysteries, and it's listed in their wiki, some man came forward in 1980 and went to the police, and he admitted that he was the one that did it, and he gave details that weren't released, such as the fact that the girls were apparently bound with electrical cords. But according to this, they say, oh God, how do they describe him? They say that he... They make a statement about his mental health, and I cannot remember the verbiage that is used, basically saying that he was not having visions, but he was delusional.
Yeah.
Okay, but my problem with that is, A, it came from Unsolved Mysteries, so I don't, and I haven't seen it anywhere else. So I have a hard time with it.
I mean, they actually did do their own independent investigations often.
They did, although it'd be sometimes it's nice to spice things up a little bit. Not saying they did that, but
totally,
my point is, if this guy had details like that, don't you think there would be record of it somewhere? If somebody like actually saying, oh, we're going to investigate this guy? Like, don't you think that Self would have somehow heard of this, and they would have tried to track down the records of this to exonerate that poor guy who still was sitting in jail at that point almost 10 years for a crime he didn't commit?
I feel like there may have been some sense of, I don't know, this guy seems like he might not be totally mentally there, so realistically he's gonna get committed, not sent to prison, and well, we've already convicted this guy of it, and like, I don't know, he might be guilty even if there's some questions about it, and I there may just be a sense of like, well, we already got, there's already somebody who's rotting for this case, so
screw it.
Yeah.
Could have been. That is,
you know, I gotta tell you that as a taxpayer, if that's the opinion of the police force, with my tax dollars is, well, we got somebody locked up, so screw it. We're not going to figure out if we did it right.
That's not really a good attitude to have.
I agree.
That makes me very upset.
I agree. I'm just trying
to... Well, even if I weren't paying taxes, I wouldn't be happy about that, frankly.
Well, but I know there was a year or two that you didn't, but... sorry, IRS listeners.
I forget you heard that. And as far as the detail about tying them up with electrical cord, I mean, that's not that bizarre. It could have just been a major, you know, he could have been delusional, confessing to a crime he didn't commit.
We're going to move to our next suspect in our laundry list of suspects. This is number 5 in this giant list that I created. Okay, we have William Lewis Reese. William Lewis Reese committed his first crime when he was caught and charged in 1986 for picking up a 19-year-old girl in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. He did that with the pretense of giving her a ride. Instead, he abducted and raped her for several days in the sleeper cab of a semi.
Okay, first of all, let's just go ahead and say he probably didn't commit his first crime at that time.
Crime for getting that he was caught for is the way that I meant to phrase that.
That's a better way to look at it.
Yes. Yeah. He, this girl, she managed to escape under the pretense of using a bathroom or something. I can't remember what it was. And then he got charged for doing this crime. Mm-hmm. And while he was awaiting trial.
Like out on bail?
Yes. Well, he's out on bail for this rape case. He raped another woman that he had met in a bar.
But what?
This guy seems to have a compulsion.
Maybe. He was sentenced to 25 years in prison for the first rape. I think that he was sentenced for maybe it was 25 years total. I can't remember at the moment, but 25 years nonetheless, this guy should be locked up and kept away from the general populace.
Yes.
Yeah, not so much. He only served 10. Yeah. He only served 10 years of that sentence. He was then again put into jail in 1997 for kidnapping a woman. Just like Kevin Edison Smith, when he was put into jail in 1997, his DNA was put into the system and checked against other cases. And after that, he started getting linked to other unsolved crimes and cases. So this guy, he went about this, he wanted to avoid the death penalty because he was in jail, if I remember right, in Oklahoma. Maybe it was Louisiana. I can't remember which one it was.
One of those southern...
But it has the death penalty. And his deal was, you don't put me on death row. You don't try me for murder, and I'll go ahead and I'll help you out.
That's not an uncommon deal, actually.
It's not. Well, and so he led investigators into the field, and he took them to where the body of Jessica Kane was. She had disappeared in 1997.
Was she on our list?
Yes, she was. Okay. She was one of the last ones we talked about in that 30-person list. He also took them to where the body of a girl named Kelly Cox was. She had gone missing around the same time as Jessica, though she wasn't actually on our list. Kelly wasn't. Jessica was.
Jessica was was 17, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
He is also believed to be connected to the disappearance of 12-year-old Laura Smither.
She's the one ballerina.
The one who went jogging.
Why is that? Why is he suspected of that?
There are links in his pattern and his travels that make people think that he was in the area when it happened.
Oh, okay.
But it's obviously it's nothing concrete because he has not been charged with her death. But they think that he might be involved in that. I mean, but if you think about it, the guy was driving a truck. He was driving from Galveston all the way up into Oklahoma. What's the main city? Oklahoma City. Wow, Steve.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well done.
Yeah. He was driving all from north to south along that route, driving a truck all the time.
On Interstate 45.
Well, Interstate 45 is the route between Houston to Galveston. So he's on that road. And if he's just out and about stealing girls and raping and killing them, then again, just like we said before, it's possible that he could be involved with at least one or two others that are on our list that just didn't get any recoverable DNA.
Yeah, the ones that were outside the killing fields, but somewhere else along I-45.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit before, and let's give a little more description of what's going on in terms of what it has to be like for these poor girls, because you think, well, they're on the side of the road or they're near the road. Like, they should be able to run and scream and get help.
Yeah, but there's nobody else out there.
It's oil fields, active and abandoned. It's giant expanses. Apparently, it is amazingly windy, so you can yell at somebody 50 feet away, say, and they'd have no idea. Cars are whizzing by on the interstate. A couple hundred yards away, they're not going to see what's happening. I mean, one of the cops in this the Smither case was talking about the fact that you could literally get off the freeway, drive off the off ramp, down a dirt road, drive for 5 minutes. You are now in a complete and total seclusion. Drop a body, drive back onto the freeway and be gone, and no soul would be the wiser for months on end. And the only reason they would know is because they found the body you dumped.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of situation. This is why. So I know some people are going, how is this possible? This doesn't make any sense. It is
pretty
just,
easy, actually.
Super
it's
easy.
Such a rural area. It's just a stretch of road that is a freeway with a couple of little towns dotting it, and then it's marshes and dirt roads. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So it's why these girls are so hard to find.
Yeah.
Okay, so off of that soapbox, or whatever it was that I was on there for the moment.
Yeah. I think William Reese is a pretty good...
I think that this guy is probably responsible for a couple of them. The fact that it didn't happen right away, but in watching what happened and it evolved and his willingness to cooperate, I would call that a knee-jerk reaction of, oh, hell, they're going to figure out all the ones that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to roll over. He folded like a cheap suit, and he went ahead and he told them what he needed to make sure that they didn't kill him.
Yeah, but also he didn't need to lead them to every single body, just a couple of them.
Right, I mean, but his ability to lead them to certain bodies.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like he
definitely
did.
Definitely. You know, it's probably likely that he's responsible for the majority of the strangled bodies in that area.
And maybe not the shot ones, you think?
And maybe not the shot ones.
So that's the weird thing, is the ones that were shot, I've never found anybody who followed that pattern of steal a girl and then once he has committed whatever acts he was intending to commit with her, his method of getting to kill her was to shoot her in the head. Like, none of these guys that we're talking about match that.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing in the early pattern of these deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, the shots to the head, what caliber of gun were they?
They were smaller caliber, if I remember like right. I want to say that I read once that it was a .22 that they were shot in the head, but I cannot be sure of that, Joe, because I've been reading about this, obviously, for a while, and then it was about 4 or 5 days ago. I was like, what crap, what caliber was it that they were killed with? And I started going back, and of course, you know how this is. Suddenly, you can't find it anymore.
Yeah, totally.
Because the internet has deleted that information from itself so that I cannot answer that question.
Yeah, alas.
Stupid internet.
So are there any more suspects?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
It's the Kool-Aid Man should break in right now and say that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, there were a ton of suspects in this thing. I mean, I was compiling a list of my own, and it looks like you didn't miss anybody, but my list was getting pretty long. I was like, wow. This
is, yeah, I almost had to go to a spreadsheet of suspects.
Yeah.
And that just rubs me raw. I don't want to make a spreadsheet of these people.
Yeah.
Ugh. I have a hard enough time having them on my computer as it is. Okay. We're going to go to the next guy, which is Edward Harold Bell. God, Bell's a weirdo. Bell showed up in Pasadena, Texas on the 24th of August, 1978. He was in a neighborhood. He got out of his truck in front of a bunch of children who were playing, and he didn't have any pants on.
He thought he was a cartoon duck.
Maybe. Oh,
yeah.
No
maybe.
Pants, no underwear. He is just, there's a phrase for when you wear only a shirt, and I'm actually not going to say that. That's what he was doing. There's a guy by the name of Larry Dickens. Larry's mom yells to him and says, listen, slow that guy down. Don't let him get near the kids and delay him long enough for the cops to get here. So Larry Dickens does that. He's a stand-up guy, and he gets in his way. He eventually takes Bell's keys out of Bell's truck, at which point Bell loses it. He shoots Dickens a couple of times with a pistol. Larry Dickens runs away. He runs into the garage of his mom's house and he collapses. His mom is holding him. Bell comes up and demands the car keys or the truck keys back. Larry gives him the keys, at which point Bell shoots him point blank in the head while his mother is still holding him. And then walks back to the truck. And while this seems not normal, you would think at this point he would then get in his truck and drive away. No, he grabs a rifle and he comes back and he continues to shoot Larry in the face.
Nice guy.
Yeah. He then at this point he tries to get away.
Probably should have like not come back with the rifle if he really wanted to get away.
Yeah, if he was trying to
probably
flee.
Probably wouldn't have gotten
away anyway. Yeah, that was a bit excessive.
A bit,
yes. Understatement of the year on my part. So he tries to get away. The cops catch him in like 20 minutes. He didn't do any very good job at all of trying to escape.
But this is a part, this next part is what really puzzles me.
Well, what, the brutality of the case? Because, I mean, they bring him back and his sister, Larry's sister, IDs him and, you know... Oh, the release. Okay,
they let him go.
Okay, yeah, they let this bozo go. They charge him and they release him on bail, and he's gone.
What a surprise!
Shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. No guano. He is gone, and he is at large for a total of 14 years. Bell is eventually arrested in Panama in 1993.
There is a Panama, Florida. Yeah, Panama City, I think, Florida.
I think it is. It's Panama City, Florida. I just realized, like, wait, not Panama, the country.
Yeah.
It was Panama, the city, and I believe it was in Florida in 1993. And at that point, he was sentenced to 70 years in prison.
Just 70, though.
Just 70.
Again, not life.
But again, they begin to look at his history and his pattern, and they believe that he might actually be the one who was involved in the murders of Rhonda Johnson and Sharon Shaw. Again, the girls who went to the beach.
Yeah.
He's another one that this guy, he fills in details in unsolved mystery or unsolved murders, and he starts confessing to things. And initially he claimed that he had killed 7 girls. He then changed that number in 2011 to 11 girls. And A guy like this who makes his own catchphrase, I really worry that this guy is watching The Apprentice in prison to come up with a catchphrase like this, because his catchphrase is the 11 that went to heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's disturbing, but he makes, again, this is one of those things, like these crazy claims. He begins, he's always actually said that it wasn't his fault. It was the government's fault.
Yeah, they brainwashed him.
They brainwashed him, and they programmed him, and they forced him to be a flasher and to rape girls and to want to kill them.
Yeah.
He seems like a good suspect for the girls that were shot.
Yeah.
He did like to shoot people.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, I guess I misspoke earlier. He is suddenly flailing firearms. Yeah. You know who he actually makes me think of is reading his case. It made me think that maybe he was loosely the basis for the movie Mr. Right. Yeah. Either of you seen that?
Seen that movie. No, I have. It looks kind of intriguing.
It's a Sam Rockwell movie, and it is a lot of fun. I saw the description and I was really hesitant, and then my wife and I sat down and watched it. And normally in my house, I'm known for picking really bad Netflix titles. Why did you pick that movie? That was a horrible movie.
Yeah.
She actually laughed through it to the point she's like, okay, that one was good. Yeah. And Sam Rockwell. I mean, you can't go wrong with Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, sure. Whoever he is.
You know who he is.
Yeah, oh yeah. Next up.
Next up, yeah, we have Clyde Edwin Hendrick.
Hedrick, I think.
Hedrick, you're right. Not Hendrick, yeah. Hedrick. So this one and the next one, I'm going to tell people, if you are in a position to do so, please pause and Google this guy and look at his mugshot. He is a Texas resident, and he looks like he has lived in the backwoods of Texas for many, many years. It's an amazing mugshot.
Yeah.
But Clyde, in 1985, was questioned in the investigation of the death of a woman by the name of Ellen Ray Beeson. And initially, they didn't know that she was murdered. They just knew that she died and something didn't add up. And then 20 years later, so they charged him with tampering with a corpse. And then 20 years later, they exhumed her body and they reinvestigated the case and they figured out what was going on. And here's what was going on. According to Hedrick, he and Beeson had been out drinking, and then they had gone to some place, and she had gotten naked and went skinny dipping, and then she drowned.
Not with him, she didn't.
And then
that could have been a smiley face killer thing.
Could have been.
Yeah.
When she drowned, he went in to help her, but when he got her body out, she realized she was dead, so he panicked, and he threw her in the back of his truck, and he looked for a place to dispose of her body and eventually dumped her body.
That totally makes sense.
When they exhumed the body, the description of the case says that when it was in the initial autopsy and body review done, she was not cleaned enough. I believe that means they did not get enough brain out of her skull to be able to tell this stuff in the x-rays. But when they exhumed her body and they did a good job, they figured out that part of her skull was caved in because she'd been clubbed in the head with something, which means he had clubbed her in the head and killed her. And that's why he panicked and dumped her body. So why are we talking about this guy? Well, the reason is that what he did is where he dumped her body was near Calder Road, the Calder Road property, the killing field. He threw her body, it's reported, under a couch.
So
But it's also, in other reporting, said that it was actually just a bench car seat, the back seat of a car.
This is also a dumping ground for stuff other than bodies.
Apparently so. I mean, it's an abandoned chunk of ground, so not really surprising.
Yeah.
So that's why he's brought up in this. I got to tell you that there's not a whole lot of linkage in terms of him to this place other than that one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he is one of the few people that I know of who got charged for the same crime twice and convicted in two different ways.
Yeah.
So it goes down the books that way. But
I don't think a guy that looked like him would have had an easy time of it trying to get girls to climb into his car voluntarily.
Agreed.
Not in the later years of his life, not the 20 years later. But
yeah.
Okay. Well, then let's go to one of our final ones here.
Bobby Jack. I like this
Bobby
guy.
Jack Fowler. Oh, you I do remember like Bobby Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we heard about Bobby Jack from My Favorite Murder.
Yeah, yeah, when we were at their show here in Portland. Yeah.
George and Karen talked about him.
So this guy, actually, I consider him a contender for best mugshot ever.
Yeah.
Again, this is another one. Please so Google good. This guy's it's mugshot. Good. You will have a little fun at his expense, and that is perfectly okay.
It's totally okay, given the kind of human he is.
Yes, but I don't know if he was a human, to be quite honest. Fair. I think he might have actually been a mole person or a reptilian or whatever it is you want to call him, because he was another terrible human being.
Oh, yeah, he was a very prolific serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the ones that's not so famous as, like, you know, everybody's heard of Henry Lee Lucas and Ted Bundy, but this guy's a little more obscure, but he killed a lot of people.
He did. He did a lot of killing. So Bobby Jack Fowler was a construction worker, and he traveled across the U.S. He looked for work. He also apparently at the same time was looking for women to have unconsensual sex with and then possibly kill. The man was all over this country. He's known to have been in British Columbia, Florida, Iowa, Louisiana, Texas, Oregon, South Carolina, Arizona, Tennessee, and Washington State. Literally all over this continent. Mm-hmm. Well, the northern
all
half
over
of
the
it.
Western part of it, anyway.
Well, the northern
Louisiana's not.
I guess Louisiana's kind of east of the
Texas is not northern.
South Carolina's on the other coast. Come
Arizona?
On, buddy.
All right, fine.
Tennessee?
Okay, so according to what I've read, he starts his criminal career in 1969 with a murder charge in Texas that didn't stick. And I don't want to try and get into this guy's psyche, but it is said, and I'm going to emphasize the word said, because I don't know that he ever said this himself, but it is said that he believed that, quote unquote, women he came into contact with who were hitchhiking and or hanging out in bars wanted to be sexually assaulted.
Oh, you're asking for it.
That's some pretty ironclad reasoning. Okay.
Yeah, so this guy, I mean, obviously already it's pretty nobody likes this guy. He was put into jail for the final time in 1996 based on what happened on June 28th, 1995, when he was with a woman in Newport, Oregon. He was in a hotel. She jumped out of the second story window of the hotel to escape him. She still had a rope tied around her ankle. She got to the police. She told the police what was going on. Obviously, she was not there by her own choice. She was there under duress. And then they arrested him, and they took his DNA. He thankfully died in 2006. He died in prison, but his DNA has linked him to several cases all over the country. I know this one's on our list, but there is the Highway of Tears?
Yeah.
Yes, it's the Highway of Tears in British Columbia.
Yeah.
And so he's linked to at least one case up there through DNA. He's also believed to be responsible for the death of four girls in the Newport, Oregon area back in, I believe it's the mid-80s or maybe it's the early 90s. Again, there's so many of these guys, it's hard to keep all of their various crimes straight. He liked to travel. I think he called himself a rambling man. I think that's where I got that phrase early. He liked to say he was rambling about.
Yeah, well,
but he liked to travel. He liked to rape. He liked to kill. He liked to drink.
He was just awful.
Yeah.
He was all around just a terrible guy. But
well, the guy, I got to hand it to him, though. He knew what he wanted, you know, and he just went out and got it.
I wouldn't say I've got to hand it to him. I would say we need to take it away from him, because that guy shouldn't have been doing what he was doing.
Oh, absolutely. No, he should have been put in a cage a lot earlier than he was. He got away with murder for a long time.
No pun intended.
No, literally.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes,
he did.
Absolutely. So the fact he is a one that he's actually seems to be gaining some traction in terms of people knowing about him because of being linked to these things in various places. Yeah. And I can't say that he's not responsible for any of these things in Texas. He could very well be.
But I can't see him really sticking around for years. You know, he might have been responsible for some of them, but
that's why
not the entire series, I don't think.
Well, but they have such large gaps in between them.
Yeah, it could have been.
You know,
he came and went.
He was doing what he was doing. He just wasn't doing it in the same city and state the whole time. Yeah. So the path is not connected. The connecting the dots, it just never happens.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
I'd really like to know exactly how many people old Bobby Jack did kill.
I don't think we'll ever know.
No,
I was
going to
say, Bobby Jack's the only one who will know, and he obviously wasn't going to talk.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in jail for a good 10 years before he died, and he never spilled the beans. So, no telling. So our final one is actually a theory, though it's a very simple one, which is that it was all of these guys, or it was none of these guys, or it was a single guy. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the general discussion area. We don't normally do this.
We don't know. It could have been, though.
But, I mean, yeah, if you think about it, it's entirely possible that some of these girls were killed by the same person in the groups or clusters, and that accounts for all of them. It's possible that none of them were killed by these guys, except for the ones who we know, like Bobby Jack and Ken, whatever his name is.
Kevin.
That we know by DNA. But, I mean, maybe all the ones I've talked about so far, they're not it. Maybe all of the other ones, this is the scariest story, the part of the story, is maybe they're all the same guy. And he's just doing it different all the time, or
mixing it up, yeah.
Yeah, or as Joe said, he's some kind of authority figure.
You know what? To be honest with you, it's scarier to think that they're all done by different people.
True.
That's even scarier to me, that there are that many people, men or women, who during this time period, for whatever reason, kill young women and then just dump their bodies into swamps. Like, that's the scariest theory to me, is that there are 30 individual...
Yeah.
Or what, 20, you know, I guess 25, the couple that, like...
Joe said earlier, you know, he looked at another list, and, I mean, that list was 50 girls deep.
That's the scariest one.
50 or 60, something.
Yeah.
That,
so, that none of them are really connected.
It probably is more than one person, I think. I mean, some of the MOs varied enough. Like, whoever did all the gunshots to the head...
Probably
the same person, you know. The strangulation is probably maybe somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's probably like two or three.
I like the idea that if it was a cop, you know, he's like, you know, well, I don't like it in the sense that I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong.
You like it as a good theory.
Well, yeah, so he wants to go do a little killing, so he goes to the evidence room and just grabs a gun there that's been checked into evidence. Goes out and murders somebody with it, and then just brings it back and puts it back in evidence.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he could have done something. I doubt that he would do that. That's taking a big risk.
That's a giant risk, actually. Yeah. If it's already in evidence.
Yeah, it kind of is. But still, you know, I mean, what a great way to get rid of your weapon.
Yeah, no, what you're talking about is, I believe it was Training Day, Denzel Washington. They had a gun that was dirty that had been used in a crime, but the cops were hanging on to. That would be the gun in your scenario that would get used. It's a gun you've taken off of somebody that you know was used to commit a different crime.
That is another way to do it. If you take it off a criminal, you have lots of opportunities to do that kind of stuff.
You know, what's really scary to me, and there are places like this, is that what is it that makes it such a magnet? Like, what is it that draws people that are going to commit these acts in such a concentration? Like, what is it that they are looking for or they like so much?
Well, they live in Texas, so.
It's Texas.
Blaming it on Texas. For once, I'm not actually blaming Texas.
Well, there is, you know, Houston actually is a very, very large city, and it's very close to Houston.
Yeah, yeah. 40-50 miles away. I mean, it is the feeder route from Galveston to Houston. But my point is, like, okay, if it's just proximity to Houston, then why isn't the next 50 miles up the interstate from Houston littered with bodies in the same way? Do you know what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Why aren't they distributed or even clustered a little bit closer to Houston?
Yeah, or it's like, and there's the Highway of Tears. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like... It's scary. It's like, what is it? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's hot. It's secluded. It's got bogs and bodies of water that a body will decompose quickly in. And I don't know.
I don't like it. Are you saying that it's kind of the perfect storm of the place to dispose of? That's what's drawing these guys, is that they realize it's a good place?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I would,
but I would, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if I was going to get scientific about it, I would look at I-95, go to the Texas Department of Transportation, get the traffic
45.
45.
Did I say 95? Yeah. Sorry. Okay, 45 to get traffic counts and just see what traffic counts are like along our stretch. It may be that the traffic just 5-10 miles further north, closer to Houston, is a lot heavier, and that's that in itself makes it a more attractive place.
But these girls also disappeared from places that were close to there. They didn't. They weren't disappearing from Houston. They weren't. You know, it's not as though it's a dumping ground for bodies from Houston.
Could have been a local too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's scary. Yeah, it's all scary. There's no good answer. It's all just scary answers.
I mean, we can step around this for the next 10 minutes asking the same question in different ways and giving the same answer. In the long and the short of it is, it's disturbing.
A little bit.
It feels like things have dropped off in the killing fields.
Yeah.
In the Texas killing fields. And yet, when I look at the lists, I mean, like I said, the list I used was curated by somebody else. And a list that was curated by yet another individual has things that are in the 2010s that are in that region. So
yeah.
I don't know that it's actually ended, and I don't know.
Well,
long story short, avoid that area.
Yeah, it is.
If you live in the Galveston to Houston area, please move.
Well, that area
apparently is not a good area.
Well, it's it may be that somebody's still killing with dumping somewhere else, because that area is not as desolate as it used to be. If you look at the area, there's
a
lot of subdivision development in the area right nearby. I mean, very close by.
That really confused me at first. I was like, what? How is this a great place to dump bodies? And then I know we've talked about this before. I go on Google Earth and I go back to the satellite footage from 10, 15, 20 years ago. And suddenly you realize all those subdivisions just didn't exist.
Pretty recent stuff. Yeah. And so, that might be one reason the bodies are going somewhere else nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Any last thoughts for either of you? I know we've kind of chewed this up mostly.
It occurs to me we haven't blamed Chupi in a while, so,
You think it's the Chupacabra?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, I don't think that's it, but we'll let it stand.
Okay.
We never turned away a theory.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, I will have links to some of the research for today's show on our website. Website, of course, is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. On that website, you're going to find a couple of things that are going to be of interest to you. One is the episode list. So there is a list, an extra page or a separate page in our website that has a full list of all episodes that we have put out. On that right-hand panel, you're also going to find links to merchandise, shirts, mugs. We haven't yet got plush dolls, but maybe someday that'll happen.
Action figures. Joe Steve Devin action figures.
I really want to get action figures. I just haven't figured out how to make it happen.
We will soon.
We are available. This episode is available for streaming or download off the website. It's also available through a whole host of other places. So anywhere that you can stream podcasts or subscribe to podcasts, we're going to be there. So Google Play or Stitcher, or if you subscribe and download, that would be something like iTunes. All of those are available. We're always there. If that avenue allows you to rate the podcast, please do rate and review, because that's how other people find us. We are in a number of places on social media. We have the Reddit account, which there's discussions of episodes. It's the Reddit subreddit.
Yeah.
I cannot let easy words escape my small brain today.
I know. It's okay.
I'm getting used to it. Wait till I screw up Twitter.
What about the Twitter?
Yes, the Twitter. So we have a tweet. We do have a Twitter account. It is Thinking Sideways without the G in the middle, where we do put out a lot of different stuff. We're also going to be on Facebook. So we have the Facebook page and the Facebook group. So like the page, join the group. In the group, you'll be able to talk to other members about past cases and cases that we've never talked about. So a lot of good discussions going on in there. If you want to get a hold of us directly, you're more than welcome to do that. We do have an email address.
That's right, we do, don't we?
We do. It's thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. So if you have episode suggestions, you have questions, you have concerns, you'd like to be an expert for us because you have a field where you know that you can share that information with us, send that to us at that email address.
Please.
That is all of the stuff that I have on my laundry list here today. So I'm going to say goodnight to everybody.
Yeah, sleep well.
Yeah, adios.